Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Good morning and welcome to Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. This is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. My name is Dan. I'm an alcoholic. You can also say hi, Dan, if you like.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, everyone. And I'm your chairperson for today's meeting. So we'll start this meeting as we normally do with a serenity prayer. So I'll invite you all to join me. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Great stuff. All right, I'll read the AA preamble now. So Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And live in the studio today, we have the Kilburnie meeting, Kilburnie Monday night. It's a meeting that runs on Monday night, funnily enough, at 7:30 at the Plunkett Rooms in Kilburnie. And it's been a very popular meeting over the years, which I've attended a few times. So welcome. And that meeting normally starts with a reading from the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is called Alcoholics Anonymous, and we also refer to it as the Big Book. So, Ange, would you like to read a passage from the Big Book? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Hi, my name's Ange. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ange.
So I'm going to be reading from Chapter 4, We Agnostics, starting at the start of the chapter. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope that we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels like he is atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, bless you, hoping against hope that we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you. But cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral, we could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will all of these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshalled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. The main objective is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That means that we've written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God. For we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. And I will leave it there.
Thanks, Ange.
That's wonderful. Thanks, Ange. All right. Now, let's we'll move on to the sharing part of the meeting. So I'm going to ask Chris to start the sharing.
Thanks, I'm Chrissy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Chrissy.
I'm very grateful to be able to do this service today. I turn up on time. I talk about the joys of being sober, and I get on with my fellows. My first AA meeting was in 1996. I got sober for 2.5 years in 2002. I had one foot in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and the other foot back out with people who still drank, alcoholics, addicts. The jobs I did, sobriety didn't seem to kind of gel with them. The people I associated with weren't the people in the rooms. I relied on medication, including naltrexone and antabuse. What happened to me was I grew up in an alcoholic family. There was a lot of secrets, a lot of lies, a lot of violence, a lot of horrible stuff. And I used to hide in bed and read books and dream about a magic carpet coming along and taking me away. I was suicidal as a young teenager. I spent time in hospital where I got medicated. I grew up with a mother who was a prescription pill addict, I suppose you call it, and she would give me some of her pills to calm me down. So I always knew that putting something in my body was going to calm me down a bit and stop the racing thoughts and the fear and the hysteria and the scaredness of people, places and things. I ran away from school all the time. I didn't like it. I didn't like people. I would hide and then I'd be at home and I'd pack a suitcase with my alarm clock and some pyjamas and then I'd go up the zigzag at the end of the street and hide and think the police will be coming to find me. And then I'd go home when it got a bit dark and cold. But I didn't realise I was running away from myself. I didn't realise that I suffered from a disease of perception, a disease that tells me I'm not good enough, I don't fit in, I'm too this, I'm too that. And that was reinforced in my home life. I got drunk for the first time at 14. It was New Year's Eve. I went to a party at a friend's place. All the teenagers were downstairs with non-alcoholic punch. My friend's older brothers had put bottles of spirits in. And all my friends took a small sip and went, "Oh, yuck, it's got alcohol in it." And I remember clearly, all those years ago, blocking my nose because I didn't like the smell of it. It reminded me of my family. But feeling that drink go into my mouth and down my throat and give me that warm feeling. I had arrived. I could be a completely different person. Didn't want to stop drinking it. I was dancing around. I was, you know, quite crazy, I think, until I threw up on the mother's white carpet and some parent took me home. Oh, it was just a disaster. I shared a room with my sister who was 9 years younger than me and I divided the room up in string. My half, her half. She always used to touch my things. And I was very selfish, self-seeking, grandiose ideas. Most of the time I was in full flight from reality. Real life and what my life was like was not what I wanted. Anyway, got home, it's probably 10 o'clock, nowhere near midnight, and I fell in the door and I woke my mother up and I went to my bedroom and, of course, I tripped over the string and the bookcase came down and my sister was crying and, you know, it was high drama. I had two brothers and they were, you know, in the hallway telling me what an idiot I was, and then I threw up again and, oh, my God, the next morning, early in the morning, my mother was vacuuming by my bed and she said, I hope you don't end up like your father. And I would have said something so smart and sarcastic and mean that I would have really upset her. I knew I was going to drink again. Of course I was going to drink again. Drinking took away the fear. I could go anywhere and do anything I wanted with a few drinks in me. And sure, people would say, I think you've got a drinking problem. I was still a teenager. And I'd go, yeah, so? I didn't care. I loved it. I got expelled from school. I had pink hair and black eyeliner. It was 1981. I hung around with older boys who were at uni. Anything that was offered to me, I would take. And when the consequences were bad, I'd blame it on the substance. It was never anything to do with me. If you had my life, you would drink too. I judged myself against other people. 1981, I was out there. Became an apprentice hairdresser. And I loved it. I loved everything, the hair, the makeup, the you name it. I loved it. And for many years I got away with a lot of things until I didn't. Until I couldn't work, couldn't do a job that I loved. I'd have alcoholic seizures. It was quick. It was very quick. And I'd pray to God as I was vomiting. And I'd pray to God when I came to and I was like in the darkest depths of Karori. There were no cell phones and I was lying next to someone. I didn't know what their name was. And I'd have to run away with my makeup down my face and the nightclub clothes still on. And it's hard work being a drinking alcoholic young woman. So this week I celebrated 10 years of sobriety a day at a time. Yeah. 10 whole years. It's a miracle and it's a gift. And I've done the legwork, but God has done for me what I can't do for myself. And I never thought I'd say anything like that. Initially, my higher power was the group of drunks that were in my meetings that said, you never need drink again. This is a spiritual solution. And now I understand. I truly understand that God does for me what I can't do for myself. No other human person can relieve me of my alcoholism. No little dog. No job, no winning lotto. It hasn't happened yet, but, you know, I have hope. Hold on, the pain will leave. Stick to the middle of the group. And it's about principles, not personalities. And the most important thing for me is I need never drink again. So I keep on coming back to AA. It's none of my business what other people think of me. And I don't like everyone, and I'm sure everyone doesn't like me. And that's fine. That's life on life's terms, not my terms, because my terms have never worked. And I can talk about the joys of being sober, of just knowing what I did last night, of having friends that I'm sure that I could text at any time of the day or night and say, I want to drink. And they can talk to me and work out, you know, what defect of character I'm in. And I was perfect in every way. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, I have fear that underpins everything. I have anger. I have a high opinion of myself from time to time, but I hate myself. You know, it's just all these contradictions. But to live a life where the police aren't banging on the door, I'm not in some violent relationship, I don't have to take what jewels I have left to super loans to get enough money to buy a couple of bottles of Scrumpy. I don't have to steal from supermarkets because now with technology, you know, I'd get caught. I don't want to get caught. I've been there, I've done that. I try to be as honest as I can. And I'm so grateful that I could keep on coming back to these rooms. So grateful that the people who have had patience and tolerance for me, because that comes hard to me. Thanks. I know I've talked too long, but too bad. The solution is in these rooms. For anyone who's lying in bed feeling so hungover and thinking, how am I going to stop? Look on the aa.org.nz website and you'll find a list of meetings that are on 365 days a year. No matter where you live, there's always an AA meeting, or there's an AA phone line, or there's this to listen to, which you find on the AA website. So thanks everyone for being here.
Thanks, Chrissy.
Thanks, Chrissy. All right, you're listening to Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and this is AA on Air, or Alcoholics Anonymous Meeting on Air. Now, some of those things that Chrissy mentioned were the AA website, which in New Zealand is aa.org.nz. So we recognise that some people overseas are listening to this via podcasts, so that's great. So on the AA website, I'm looking at it now on my phone, and on the very top of the site it says, I need help. And if you click on that, it takes you to a way to find a meeting, and I need to talk now, and also I need some information. And it's got that phone number that Chrissy mentioned as well, 0800 229 6757. So in New Zealand, that's a nationwide phone number. You can call that anytime, 24/7, and a sober alcoholic near you will answer and give you some information about AA. It will just talk to you about the meetings or whatever else you want to know. In terms of finding the meetings, yeah, if you click on I need to find a meeting, you can do a search to regions of New Zealand. You can pick any day of the week, any time, and any type. So there's in-person meetings and also online meetings via Zoom. So if you're in a place where there's not very many in-person meetings, then there's no excuse. You can jump online and go to any meeting anywhere in the country, and actually there's worldwide meetings as well online. All right, well, let's carry on with the sharing. So I'll now ask Ange to share.
Thanks. Hi, my name's Ange. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, man. Okay, cool. So the reason why I chose that reading was because I was a strict atheist for as long as I can remember, and that actually kept me from doing AA for a long time. I got to the point where I was desperate to stop, and tried pretty much everything to stop for a few years. But the one time that I was like, right, that's it, I'm going to go to a meeting. And I went to this really lovely AA meeting up in Upper Hutt on a Monday night. And everyone was really nice to me, and I related to everything that they said, and I sat there bawling my eyes out for an entire hour because I could see the flags up on the wall. And basically steps two says that we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I decided right then and there that I couldn't ever go back because I wouldn't be able to lie to these nice people and tell them that I was dumb enough to believe in a man in the sky. So I went away for a couple more years and continued to fucking ruin my life a bit more. Excuse my language, sorry. welcome to the Kilburnie Monday night meeting. It is one of the loosest meetings in Wellington. It's one of the reasons why I love it. It's one of the reasons why it's my home group. Chrissy still tells me off for swearing, but I can't control it very well. Self-control's never been a big thing of mine. I've always followed my body and my feelings to what they want to do, and usually that was escape and gain some sense of power and control. I had a very, very lonely childhood, and then in my early teens was abandoned by my mother, and that had me really angry and resentful, and I was a really messed up teenager, and didn't get along with my stepfamily and all the usual jazz. And I discovered alcohol and I absolutely loved it. I started sneaking it from home and drinking it in class, and I, you know, fell in with the sort of naughty kids, I guess you'd say. And we would just smoke and drink all the time as much as we could until, it wasn't long before I dropped out of school. And just went drinking and smoking full time because, of course, I was too scared to go home after I didn't go back to school. So that was me. I ran away. And, you know, as a 15-year-old girl that's just left home, there's sort of not really many wholesome places will take you in, but a lot of really sort of shitty places will take you in. And then there's just smoking and drinking all day, all night. And I made an absolute fool of myself repeatedly. And I didn't care. I threw up all over myself and other people and houses, and I was an absolute rampager right from the get-go. My dad got me a youth aid officer, reeled me back home, you know, found me. He actually kidnapped me from town one night. I had no idea who was dragging me home until I woke up the next morning, and it was my own father's car and clothing and house that I had thrown up all over. And I was quite proud of myself for that, actually. Fuck you, that's what you get for bringing me home. He was just trying to save his little girl, but that wasn't how I saw it. I was too angry at the world. Went through the foster system a little bit, and then I met some more delinquents, so that was useful, had more places to go. And basically I just spent my teen years hanging out with criminals and spending all day, every day, sorting out ways to escape my own head and escape the shitty world that I was living in until I turned 18. And I turned 18 the same year that the drinking age got dropped to 18 years old. And even though I thought that that was so stupid, 18-year-olds were not old enough to be out in the pubs, I also took full advantage of it and made a career of it. That was me basically for the next 10 years, and that was how I got into a lot of drugs as well. I went really, really heavy all through my 20s. By the time I was 30, I'd already had 3 children that I did not plan on. And I also managed to lose them. I didn't lose the younger two until they were 5. I was in my early 30s then. A lot of my friends that I did a lot of the drugs and alcohol with in my teens and my 20s, they either ended up in jail. Basically, yeah, most of my friends from my teenage years ended up in jail, and most of my friends from my drugging years and my 20s pulled out of it. They either died of overdoses and suicide or heart attacks or, you know, just all that drug-related sort of stuff and alcohol-related stuff. Or they grew up and pulled their shit together and had decent lives. And I just kept getting worse and worse. And life just kept getting harder and harder and harder. And I was trying to raise my kids with this serious alcohol dependency. And it was really, really difficult to try and maintain the image of being a decent human being and a decent mum while I was basically constantly needing to drink, you know, and constantly needing to make sure that I didn't smell of it or whatever. Apparently I did a pretty good job of hiding it. Most of the neighbourhood didn't actually know how bad I was because I'd go all over town in order to get my booze. I would never get it from the same place twice in one day. And the budgeting as well, the dodgy things that I had to do to be able to afford the alcohol. And I used to get really, really angry because when other solo mums or bad parents or whatever, in my opinion, they'd spend all their money on their substances and then they'd complain to the government that they couldn't feed their kids, so the government would feed their kids for them. And I'd be like, well, that's just not fair because I always feed my kids first and yet nobody will buy me booze. And I just, you know, like the whole world was against me and none of it was ever my fault. But I still somehow was deluded enough to not actually think that alcohol was the problem. It was not me. It was not my substance abuse. It was not my addiction. It was definitely not my alcoholism. It was the rest of the world. Life was unfair to me, and I didn't know why. After losing my kids when they were 5 and a half, I, instead of, you know, getting my act together and getting them back, which I, when I look back, was actually probably realistically an option, I thought, if you don't think I'm capable of looking after them, if, you know, basically if you think that I'm this, that, and the other, I'll go and show you what this, that, and the other looks like. And I went off the rails fully and completely and burnt every bridge that I had remaining. I lost my house, I lost my dog, I lost my car, I lost the few friends that I'd managed to hang on to over the years. I lost absolutely everything, and it really, 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 really sucked. It was the worst time of my life, and that was around 2019. And then I tried to pull it back together, and that was when I started doing everything I could. I tried to get into rehabs. I went to drug and alcohol counselling, all the different organisations, basically everything available in this country, I used it and I tried and I tried and I tried. But us alcoholics, we're not really, when we're actively drinking, we're not really honest people. And we feel that we have a sense of control over things and we feel that we know better. I know I definitely thought that I knew better. So I was doing everything I could to try and get help and to try and get my life back together and get my kids back. Everything but stopping drinking. Everything but actually being honest with people and putting the drink down, because the drink wasn't the problem. Like, you know, I've quit the drugs. I drink so much that I barely even get drunk now. It's just maintenance all the time. You know, it doesn't count. How can that be the problem? That just doesn't even make sense. The crux of it is that I always thought I knew better. I always thought I was smarter than everybody. And for some reason, it never worked. I couldn't hold down a place for any longer than a few months. Something would always go wrong. And gradually, my rock bottom just kept on getting worse and worse and worse until the last year when I spent it in emergency housing and was surrounded by a lot of other people who had completely lost hope and given up on their lives and saw no way out. And I was finally given what we call in AA the gift of desperation. I was booted out of another rehab that I managed to get into. Yay! And I thought that my life was over. I was absolutely distraught. I was finally hopeless enough and desperate enough to do as I was told, to actually go to any lengths, which meant not having a sneaky beer on the side whilst in recovery. And that was almost 16 months ago. I can remember having my last beer, because beer was my best friend. I like those Hagen 7.2% ones. Yum. And I had one of them on my way into detox. My probation officer, and I was like, no, this is my last beer of my whole life. I'm giving up my best friend. And I did. I treasured it. I cherished it. I enjoyed it. And I'll remember it for the rest of my life. I haven't had another one since. I never thought that there would be a day that I would wake up not wanting to drink. But through getting a sponsor and doing the steps and doing regular meetings regularly, the desire to drink was actually taken from me. I still find that really absurd to say. My kids are literally out in the waiting room right now while we're doing this. I was capable of cooking them a decent dinner last night. I'm present. That's the biggest thing. I'm present, and they can feel it, and I can feel it, and I can actually remember the cool stuff that I do with them instead of remembering the hangovers and the getting angry at them for no reason and just being a crappy parent and them remembering the good parts, because that was when I was drunk, but me not remembering that shit because I wasn't actually present for it. So I'm really glad that I'm not living that life anymore. I've made a whole lot of new friends. I've got a really good support network, and I feel a lot better just within myself. And everybody says that they can see it as well. So, I'm really, really, really grateful to AA. And yeah, just like I said at the start, the reason why I chose that reading is because I don't want the God thing to stop anybody else from giving AA a decent crack, because you don't have to believe it at the start. You don't have to believe it. It's a program of action. And if you just try it, if you just do the things that you're told to do, it's amazing the miracles that can happen. So thank you very much for listening. My name's Ange. I'm an alcoholic.
Thanks, Ange. All right, you're listening to Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. This is AA on Air, Alcoholics Anonymous Meeting on Air. And if you want to listen to more of these, you may be listening on a podcast right now. But yeah, if you want to listen to more shows, then go to the... Oh. Okay, don't press that button. go to the platform of your choice where you listen to your podcasts. And if you look up AA on Air, and it's got a little logo there with says AA on Air, and it's got some wings and the AA logo, which is a circle with a triangle in it. So feel free to have a search now and find it. But if you do find it, the platform I'm looking for takes you back right to the 13th of January. Every 4 weeks there's a new meeting. So there's all different people from New Zealand, Wellington, New Zealand, sharing their experience, strength and hope. So, feel free to go back and listen to some past episodes. All right, let's carry on with the sharing. Now, Cecile, would you like to share?
Hi, I'm Cecile. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Cecile.
And, I grew up in a household that was actually pretty stable, funnily enough. I'm a bit of the black sheep of the family, I feel like, in that I went a bit wayward. Whereas it's not really the example that I actually saw growing up, but I just always felt very other and very low, and I just had issues with quite severe depression around intermediate it started. And then when I started drinking, about 14, it was just quite bad from the start. I would just scull a bottle of my mum's wine alone in my room, and I hated the taste, so I'd just plug my nose and just scull it and have all these blackout nights by myself that I never really remembered. And it was quite hit and miss. Sometimes it would make me feel better, but not always. It was very unreliable, but I just kept doing it. And when I was a bit later on in my teens, I would make an absolute dick of myself at parties. So many nights I cannot remember. I was always the blackout drinker, and people would laugh and laugh at my antics, and it was just very cringy. And I remember my boyfriend dumping me because it was just all too much. And then when I was done with school, probably around 19, 20, I was starting my days drinking vodka just straight away, or tequila, and that just became quite normal for me. And that's where all my money went. And I would just bring all these strangers home with me and never remember. It's quite scary. To this day, I probably have been in all kinds of situations that I am not really even aware of, which is a terrifying thought. So try not to dwell on that too much. But then I did clean up my act for a bit. I had this partner who, he did help me, and he ended up breaking up with me over it as well, because I became quite an angry, abusive drunk at one point. I was quite awful to be around. I just developed these real anger issues, which I think was really fueled by the alcohol. It really did something to me. It made me all kinds of crazy. And I remember one New Year's Eve trying to drown myself in the Waikato River, and him trying to stop me, and police getting involved. It's nuts. And that's what I was like, just absolutely crazy. And it didn't really click that, you know, if I quit drinking, it would help me sort out my issues quite a bit. It really felt like it was helping me, because it made me feel numb for brief moments. And yeah, I remember at one point there was these like maggot eggs in my apartment, even, because I had these pet rats and they'd just roam around. It was disgusting. And the landlord was like, "What on earth is happening in here?" The neighbors apparently had told him that they heard lots of banging and yelling and were worried, and he thought that I was in some kind of bad relationship, but it was just me, like, throwing things, just having weird rampages on my own. It feels like another life. I'm really nothing like that today. But it all kind of, I hit my rock bottom a few times, I'd say, but one of those bottoms was 2023. I ended up coming to the rooms for the first time because I had one of my typical blackout nights, and we just went nuts and was trying to do jiu-jitsu on everybody at this birthday party, and it's very embarrassing. But I didn't realize at the time that everyone was a bit terrified of me. I thought we were having great fun. And the next day they all looked at me like scared. I was like, "Oh God, what did I do?" And it was so terrifying. I went off to AA and I had this concussion. I later realized, and I ended up having to be off work for a couple of months. And it wasn't the first time that had happened to me. Brain healed, and I just kept getting myself into these horrible situations. And then I went to AA for a couple months, and it was really quite wonderful. Everyone was very kind and very understanding, and I definitely felt like a sense of belonging that I never had before. And I wasn't quite done, though, so I left for a couple months and became, it's probably the second time I became a daily drinker, and it really scared me to find myself once again drinking vodka alone in my apartment in the morning. That was very strange, because I really had thought that was a thing of the past, but it creeps back up on you if you ever get the idea that you could, you know, do it in moderation this time. if you're one of us, definitely you can't. That's when I realized that I definitely am one of those alcoholic people. And I went back to AA, and it was good. I ended up moving cities down here to Wellington. I was in Auckland at the time, and it's taken me a little bit to get back on my feet. I didn't work for a bit, and now I am back working. And, you know, just like the others said, you make great friends in the rooms, people that you can really depend on, and the need for alcohol goes away because you find that you've replaced it with something much better. I'm now 14 months, I think, so it's very exciting. And yeah, the desire to drink, it comes and goes. I mean, sometimes when you see someone having shots, it does look a bit, it does look nice, but it's definitely not worth, it's not worth all the suffering that it caused for me. It turned me into someone I didn't like or recognize. And I like knowing now that I won't push people away the way that I did in the past. Because there were several occasions in the past where I really pushed all my friends away with just my rage and my madness and my codependency, and I couldn't really stand on my own two feet the way that I am learning to now. I get a lot of strength from the AA, the meetings, the program, the friendship. It all gives me what I've been craving my whole life, and bit by bit I do feel like I'm becoming a whole person in a way I never really felt like I was before. So it's definitely something worth sticking with. It's not always easy. Life still gets hard, but I have a growing sense of faith that it will work out and that I'm capable of doing what I need to do. And I can't say enough how grateful I am to have had this experience and to have grown in the way that I have. So I'm really glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Cecile. Thanks, Cecile. All right, this has been a great show of Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. And we've had the privilege to have the Kabuni Monday Night crew in today, and it's been really great to have the home group members in here. And so just in relation to what was talked about earlier in terms of getting hold of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll talk about the website again, which is aa.org.nz. And on that website, so you can access that through your phone or your laptop or your PC, and you can actually find any meeting in New Zealand. So on there, you can go onto the meetings list and you can search for the region that you want, for example, Wellington, and you can go in and find any day, have a look and say Monday, any time, look at evening and in person, and look at that. We've got Kabuni Monday Night. 7:30 Kabuni Plunkett Rooms is one of the meetings. There's also other meetings in Wellington at other times, 7 o'clock, 7:30, and even 5:30 as well. So, there's, any time you want to get to a meeting, then there's many different ways to find that. So, as I said, on the website, it's great. Also, there's a phone number as well, which is 0800, let me just find that, 229-6757, or if those of you that remember the letters that can become numbers, and you can 0800 AA works, if that means anything to some of us people that remember times before texting was common, those dark ages. So it's been a real privilege. We've still got about 30 or so seconds left, so I'll just fill in and say I'm down, I'm an alcoholic, and just how grateful I am to be here, and it's just a wonderful experience being sober on a Saturday morning, because Saturday mornings never used to exist for me. Like, it was, I used to sleep through them, and now being of service to other people is kind of like, it's kind of a big deal now, and I really enjoy it, and it's been quite a few years for me, and I'll leave it there. So if we just the shortest share ever. So if we just join together with a serenity prayer, that'd be great.
Thanks, Dan.
Oh, you're welcome.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.